22. Last rite.
I am old. I am tired. I sit on the front pew of the wooden supplicant stalls to the right-hand side of the golden throne. I ease my limbs. I rest my staff against the stall beside me. The seats are old and tired too, their gold leaf cracked, their carved finials as bleached and smoothed as driftwood from exposure to the throne's light. The motionless proconsuls, Uzcarel and Caecaltus, pay me no heed, for I am a part of this place to them, as much a feature of the realm they guard as the great dais and the tiles and the pillars. They are not the sort of guards or sentries that a senior of the court can have a passing conversation with. They are fixed in duty at a post-human pitch that is unsettling in its intensity and allows no distraction. Such is the perfection of the weapons he has wrought. I had no hand in the custodians. I take my seat and I wait. I have done all I can. I have stood at his side. I have called to him, urged him, requested that he answer. There has been no sign of a response. All I can do now is attend to other affairs of state while I wait. If a response ever comes, it must. It must. So, though I sit and wait in silence, for all sound is crushed this close to the golden throne, there is no silence inside me. Since I came to this place that others call the throne room hours ago, to stand watch at his side and plead with him to rouse and listen, my mind has also been at work elsewhere, a multitude of elsewheres. It is noisy inside my head. A thousand thoughts, a host of ideas and concepts semantically condensed into sigils and symbols, the synchronized minutiae of an empire in crisis, 100 concurrent, far-spoken conversations with seniors of the war court, or my diligent, labouring chosen in various parts of the shrinking palace. Simultaneously, I monitor a score of different charts and updating data projections. I advise and command. I review every scintilla of the data that comes blizzarding at my mind and convert it into compressed packets of differentiated information, sorted by subject and priority, each one summarized by a sigil, sign, or signifier in my mental inventory. The workings of the Imperium become a constellation of sigils in my brain. This is my life. This is how his regent serves him. I am old. I am tired. I sit on this worn pew. There is still so much to be done. And I now appreciate that if what I have predicted comes to pass, I will not live long enough to see it all finished. I divert a portion of my mind to the rapid preparation of a legacy. The compilation, hasty and clumsy, I am sorry to say, of the crucial yet soon to be orphaned tasks I will have to delegate to my chosen when the time comes. It will test them, but they will cope. That's why I chose them. One other task occupies me as I await his response. I intend to complete it myself. I won't leave it for others to finish after I'm gone. One part of my mind has, for the last few hours, been permanently linked to the cordoned theatre of the Chirurgians, 15 kilometres away from where I sit. I breathe. I close my eyes. I bow my head. My active conscious focus returns to that mental strand. I prepare to make another try. In my mind's sight, I resolve the theatre. There he lies. The great Kargan, the warhawk, broken in death. Just hours past, Jagatai slew Mortarion in a humbling duel, perhaps most remarkable because they were so unevenly matched, and unlike the treacherous Pale King, Jagatai could not hope to come back from the dead. I look down at his face, his shuttered eyes, his cyanotic lips, as almoners wash and anoint his body, and a storm seer administers his funerary rites. I smell the stink of salves and sterilizing liquors. The Warhawk is dead, by any mortal standard. Because he fell so close by, just beyond the walls, his body was carried in at once and placed on this catafalque in a balming field of catalepsian stasis and life suspense. If he had died further out, or on another world, there would be no hope at all. But there is. For now, and not much longer, an iota of necromimesis remains. The tattered banner of Jagatai's soul, gusting into the warp, is still attached to his corpse by a single thread. I have determined this, and I have been trying, repeatedly in these last few hours, to draw it back. Every shred of healing science has been exhausted, for it is a matter quite beyond Medicaid law. I have been ministering my anagogic craft to keep that thread attached. It is slow salvation. Each time I try, the attempt ends in failure, and I am forced to ease away. The Khan soul will not survive a prolonged effort on my part. It frustrates and saddens me. It should be possible. I don't know why I can't save him. Perhaps even my will and warp craft are not sufficient. Perhaps it is hubristic of me to presume I can act like a god and claim the power or right to bring a man back from death. Perhaps Jagatai is tired of the world and yearns to leave it. But I will try, and I will keep trying. If my lord's attention was not so occupied elsewhere, it's what he would be doing. It's what he'd want me to do. He would not see another son die. I bend my mind in again and resume the subtle psychosurgery to keep Jagatai's soul secure. And this time I am granted one merciful miracle. Anabiosis. It is demanding even for me, but I gather the tattered dancing shreds of Jagatai's soul, and I draw them back in, folding them tenderly into the casket of his body. I exhale. The Warhawk will live. It will be days, weeks, perhaps months before his corporeal body heals and he awakens, but he will live. If any world remains to live upon. Then, at the very last, as I look down at what I have done, I realize I haven't done it at all. I couldn't. Such a feat was beyond me. It was shameful arrogance to believe I could do any such thing. I have not done this. Someone else has. Someone else has reached in past me and performed the deed, like the god he is not, but appears to be. Because someone else has stirred, and needs me, and does not want me distracted by other matters. I look up, eyes wide open. Proconsul Caecaltus is looming over me like a golden titan in his aquilon plate. He is reaching down to nudge my arm and wake me. "I'm here! I'm awake, my boy!" I splutter, heaving myself upright. He tries to steady me and help me up. "I can do it," I tell him.
A proconsul of the Heteron does not leave his place except under the most exceptional circumstances.
Regent,
he says, with the sort of voice a mountain would have if it could speak.
I know, I know, I know, I insist.
I clutch my staff with numb fingers and hobble past him, out of his immense shadow into the light that casts it. The Golden King, upon the golden throne, seems just as still and silent as he was before. But I know he is present. His mind swung open and directed at me. It is a terrifying feeling.
Forgive me that I called upon you, I say. I would not disturb you in your work, but it's time. The clock's run out.
He nods. His voice is suddenly inside my head. It says,
I cannot fight alone.